Welcome back to TechNet Radio. IT pro guru Dan Stoltz welcomes Tony Asaro to the show as they take an in-depth look at the overall virtualization landscape and the many factors companies need to consider when thinking about their virtualization needs. Tune in as they discuss Hyper-V versus VMware, live migration and Hyper-V replica, as well as how to manage your virtualization solutions with System Center 2012. Dan, the mic is yours.
Welcome, Tony. Thanks for joining us on IT Pro Guru versus Tony Asaro on virtualization landscape in a heterogeneous world. How's it going today, man?
Hey, it's going great, brother.
Thanks for joining us. I know you're quite influential in the virtualization market and have deep seeds in the VMware community. Before we get started, perhaps you could tell us a bit about yourself, your company, and your affiliations with the local technology communities.
Well, I've been in the IT industry for 27 years now, in various forms. I have been working as an industry analyst and consultant for 12 years now, focusing very heavily on virtualization and on storage and data protection, all of those things in the data center. I am very involved with the Virtualization Technology Users Group. This is an independent users group that focuses on all platforms for virtualization, so Microsoft as well as VMware and Citrix and Xen and KVM and all of those. So it is a unique users group in the sense that it's got a very large membership, thousands of members, as well as being platform independent.
And do you want to share a little bit about your getting started or how this VTUG started?
Well, VTUG started actually as a New England VMware users group, and this was started by Chris Harney and also his wife Dawn Harney worked very closely and have been for 8 or 9 years with this users group. And over the years, they decided to break away from the standard VMware users group because they realized from their membership that that there was a need for independence and to explore other platforms in addition to VMware. And so this year, or 2012, they decided to really put a stake in the ground, and the big winter warmer event in Gillette Stadium highlighted Microsoft very heavily in there, as well as the other platforms. So that's how it's grown. I got involved to help them bring the users group to another level in collaboration with them, and to focus on online services as well as these live events. And so we're doing a number of things to that end.
Awesome. And I've got we'll talk a little bit more about some of the online stuff in a bit.
Okay.
So as a consultant architect for systems, what are you hearing in the field as it relates to the virtualization landscape? What's going on?
Wow. See, chaos, confusion, and complacency. There's, it's interesting. We're quite mature on some levels in the virtualization area, but you do run into the same things over and over again, and challenges with data protection, challenges with sprawl, challenges with efficiencies. We thought that this was going to cost us less, but it really hasn't. Certainly, it's accelerated. Applications going online, it's improved our ability to move faster in the data center. But the other thing too is that we're kind of waiting for the next landscape shift, and it hasn't really happened. VMware bet on cloud computing and to some extent VDI, and yet those things have not shifted in the landscape, very relatively small implementations. And so right now there is this sort of, what is our next move? What's the next chapter with the virtual data center?
Yeah, let's come back to the cloud a little bit more on that okay. Later. What do you think the primary forces are playing into the decision for companies to start looking at, Hyper-V and other, non-VMware virtualization technologies? And maybe I'm leading the question, correct me or you know, stop me if I'm phrasing it incorrectly, but from prior discussions, I think, you know, one of the reasons why you switched from a VMware user group to a agnostic or, you know, vendor neutral.
Heterogeneous
community is because your users are saying, hey, we want to know more about Hyper-V. Is that true? And, you know, how does that look?
Well, a couple of things that you said there in that question. Number one is that absolutely, it isn't just the users. It's the organizations for which those users work for. So it isn't individuals. It's companies that are saying, hey, we need to look at this now. There's a few things that are pointing us that way. Number one is the maturity of Hyper-V and the management platforms that go along with it. You now get consistently this feedback that Hyper-V is now at the place where I can deploy it in my mission-critical environments in the data center. It has the features, capabilities that I need for the applications that I'm implementing. So that's an important milestone, right? If you don't have that, then you don't have a discussion. The other thing is, too, is what I said earlier, which is a landscape shift. We're looking at the data center and we're saying, okay, what else can we do? And so we look around and we say, okay, well, we've gone this far with the solutions that were at hand, and now what can we do? How can we reduce cost? Is there a way for us to reduce cost? I mentioned that before, too. We thought that we were going to be able to reduce our physical servers, and therefore we can reduce a lot of our cost associated with that. Yeah, OpEx, perhaps, capital. Expenditures, software maintenance, all of those things, what can we do to really make an impact to our bottom line? Because in this economy, right, the bottom line impacts our profitability. And for every dollar in net savings that you generate means that there's less demand on the top line.
So are you implying that Hyper-V is an opportunity to save money over VMware?
Well, it's not me that's saying that, it's the community at large,
okay.
Right?
Got it.
There are people that are coming back and saying, well, this is the motivation that we have.
Okay. So as they start looking at, you know, opportunities to save money by moving workloads into the Hyper-V realm, what do you see going first? What are the first target areas that they're looking at moving workloads?
Well, I think it's across the board. I mean, I think we've seen this over the last few years that when people are looking at a multi-hypervisor strategy, they're saying, okay, well, you know, we want to, and that's key, by the way. If you take a look at anything in the data center, even if it's an 80-20 rule or 60-40 rule or some ratio like that, mostly IT professionals want to have, and the organizations they work for, want to have a multi-vendor approach. So you see that with servers, you see that with storage, you see that with data protection. We want that balance. Well, number one is because it gives us more leverage. It also gives us more fluidity. It gives us more options, right? Options are important. I don't have to go down this path. Nobody wants a monopoly, right? Except for the person that has that owns that monopoly, of course. But nobody wants a monopoly in the end. And so that's why we need that heterogeneity.
Okay.
Go ahead.
For companies that are moving, you said.
Let me finish answering that question. So the workloads now have evolved from, you know, okay, well, maybe I'll take this other platform, you know, maybe it's Hyper-V, and say I want to do my test dev on that. Or I want to do these business critical, but maybe I'm not comfortable yet to mission critical. But now I think we've evolved to the point, and what I'm seeing out there is that people are implementing mission critical applications on Hyper-V. So it's across the board.
Okay, awesome. And what pace do you see this change happening? Is it, you know, is it just during refresh? Are they moving existing workloads? What is that? How does that play?
Well, it's varied, right? So I see all sorts of different levels of implementation. I see more and more people now that were, you know, diehard, have invested very heavily in VMware, now looking at Hyper-V seriously and saying, okay, we're going to take the next year now to see what we're going to do here, and then. You see people who are actually doing the multi-hypervisor strategy, and they're implementing multi-hypervisors, and they're doing that now. And then there are companies that I have spoken to that are actually doing a shift, and they're saying, okay, we're going to actually switch this around, and we're going to replace the majority of our VMware with Hyper-V. So it really is varied depending on the customer that you're talking to. And by the way, this is very different kind of discussion. If we had this discussion a year ago, I couldn't say these things.
Sure. And, you know, I think part of that has to do with some of the really major changes in Hyper-V version 3 running on Windows Server 2012, where it brought things. I mean, you know, live migration was part of the prior version, and a lot of the high availability, or, you know, the things that the largest enterprises needed, the one percenters. But with Windows Server 2012 and Hyper-V version 3, all of that technology is now brought to all businesses, large enterprise, medium business, as well as even small businesses. And hey, it's for the cost of server. So there's not, massive amounts of money that they have to spend on infrastructure. As an example, you can do things like live migration, live storage migration with no shared storage underneath, from direct attached storage to direct attached storage. So how do you see this really major change in technology at the operating system level, at the hypervisor level, impacting not only enterprise, but also medium and small businesses?
Well, so I'll push back a little bit and say that it isn't the one percenters. Everybody needs those things, especially if you're a small, medium-sized business, because let's face it, you don't have a lot of resources. You don't have that same level of redundancy or investment that you can make to over-engineer your environment. And everybody wants to over-engineer their environment in case of extreme circumstances. And so, yes, these things are fundamental, and they become requisite. So I would say that, yes, absolutely, having these capabilities is why we are at this stage now where people are taking a serious look or implementing heavily and making it a strategic part of their go-forward virtual data center. Wouldn't have it otherwise.
Totally, totally, totally agree. One of the things that you kind of hit on a little bit earlier in the conversation, I wanted to come back to, and that it has to do with management, because whenever you're working in a heterogeneous world, I get that people want to have multiple environments for the leverage and other things that you mentioned, but that opens a kind of a management headache a bit, right? Having multiple systems, and you have to have knowledge of, different ways of doing things on different platforms and stuff like that. And I know Microsoft has Microsoft System Center, and that's their management solution, and they can manage Hyper-V, VMware's in server. What are you seeing in that respect in terms of management, and, is System Center a play there, and how do you see things going?
Well, that is a great point, and you will see resistance in many cases to taking either a shift in hypervisor strategies or multi hypervisor strategies, because people are very invested in their current management platforms. So that is an important part of it. On the other hand, there's also a high level of interest in that too, because look, IT professionals, many of them want to learn new platforms, new management systems. So they like having those options and that expertise as well. They like being diversified also. And having that on their checklist, saying, hey, look, I'm an expert at this, I'm an expert at VMware, I'm an expert at Microsoft Hyper-V and System Center and all of those things. So it actually makes them more attractive. The question is time. Are they given the time to learn new things? Do they have the time to learn new things? And if their organizations, if their companies, if their bosses are saying, I want you to be an expert at this, you'll get very little resistance. Now, however, if their workload is overwhelming them, that's part of the problem. So, but yes, I think most IT professionals are hungry to become experts in new things as long as they get the mandate from their management to do so. The other thing too is that a lot of the IT professionals that you have out there are Microsoft experts already, so it's not like they're unfamiliar with platforms. So, and there are other things as well. And just going to point out a third-party vendor that I think is really interesting called HotLink, and they actually allow you to manage Hyper-V through vCenter. And I know there's a lot of interest from VMware administrators or virtualization administrators, as starting to call themselves now, that in being able to use a tool like that as well. So there are multiple strategies to get to our goals.
Yeah, and I think when you talk about management, there's everybody knows that that's the space that they need to be in. I mean, because if you can't manage your infrastructure efficiently, whenever you're fully virtualized, and even beyond, whenever we start talking cloud and stuff, you're lost.
The key thing here, though, is that, as I said, IT professionals have no problem learning new platforms and becoming experts. It just makes them more diversified.
Absolutely.
And more appealing to the outside world, or even within their own organizations, right? Hey, this guy's an expert on everything, you know, all of these things. I mean, adds more value to them. The mandate has to come from above, and we are seeing that happening. The mandate is coming from above.
Yeah, just to move back to the price thing just for a moment, you know, when we talk about management, I know, I'm under the impression that many companies that have an enterprise agreement, an EA, a lot of times they have System Center, you know, included in their EA. In other words, they basically already have it. So, have you seen that, and are people taking advantage of these technologies that already own them?
Well, I hear it all the time, right? So now I'm hearing it all the time. Well, you know, System Center and Hyper-V is already in our EA, so, and we're not taking advantage of it. So that is a great motivator. And again, it's bubbling up through the organization to say, hey, you know, look, it really comes down to the economics. It comes down to having the options of multi-vendor strategies, which is critical. And it's also, what are we going to do next? What's our next big thing that we're going to do in the data center to improve on either efficiencies or costs? And say, well, look, we can reduce X amount of dollars that are quite significant, by the way. One organization that I was talking to it estimates in the U.S. alone they're going to be able to save over $1 million in annual software maintenance fees. That's significant. So those are discussions that are occurring now time and time again. It's not rare.
Okay, awesome. So, you know, we talked a little bit about cloud. Maybe you can kind of tell us what you're seeing. Are you seeing any traction with cloud computing, you know, both private and public or hybrid?
Yeah, so private cloud, it's one of these things where we use the same words to mean different things sometimes. And, so cloud is one of those things, and you will find a lot of IT professionals go back and say, well, I have implemented cloud, and they consider clouds to be synonymous with their virtual data center, whereas, you know, cloud is a specific thing in certainly in the VMware vocabulary. Right. Mm-hmm. So they have, you know, cloud capabilities, you know, that they specifically want you to implement in order to put together a cloud. But a lot of people that you talk to out there say, yeah, I have cloud because I have virtualization. But cloud computing, private cloud computing as a service, as a distinct capability has very little implementation, and you know what? People are tired of hearing about it because that's all some vendors talk about is cloud, cloud, cloud. And right now, it's just buzz, right? It's just noise in the background. We're tired of hearing all the hype and all of the marketing on it. So I see very little implementation of private cloud as a discrete service, meaning that I'm creating this. The service with quality of service and SLAs, and I'm doing this multi-tenancy through these shared physical resources based on different modules in my virtual data center. Whereas if you talk to IT professionals, the majority say that they've implemented cloud because they've implemented virtualization. Public cloud, you know, I see as there's a whole set of new businesses that have decided not to have the brick and mortar data center, and they've implemented shared services in the cloud to run their businesses. However, the majority of companies take a look at public cloud. A lot of them say, I'm not going to do anything with this because I've got compliance issues and regulatory issues. And so, you know, I'm not even going to touch that. On the other side, you hear some people saying, yeah, but I'll use that. I'll use public cloud for backing up my data. I'll use cloud for doing some test dev. I'll use cloud for, you know, certain types of archival storage. So there are different uses for it. And depending on the vertical or on the industry that you're in, or even on just the age of the company, right? Newfangled companies, you know, are that are internet based might use cloud wholly, but most brick and mortar companies I'm seeing out there are very cautious about doing so.
Let's talk about the IT ecosystem. You know, we talked about, you know, different segments, whether it be storage, backup, management, security, et cetera.
Right.
What are you seeing in regards to the, you know, the impact on the ecosystem?
Well, the ecosystem, I think, is also eager to have a multi-hypervisor strategy as well. And it gives them more flexibility and more options as well. And one of the things that, and I'll be candid here, and this is not by any means to be a VMware bashing session. You know, I know that Microsoft might find that advantageous. But oftentimes, I hear from the ecosystem, the other vendors that sell into the virtual data center, unless you are the biggest of the big, it's hard sometimes to get the integration and interoperability that you need. Often it costs them a lot of money to get those certifications. And the other thing, too, is that you know, VMware actually competes with a lot of the ecosystem with their different capabilities. And in fairness, so does Microsoft on some level.
Absolutely. Yep.
So it is this thing where they say, okay, well, you know, what I bring to the table, even though Microsoft and VMware may have similar features and capabilities, hey, I can support both platforms, and now you don't have to deal with Microsoft's version and VMware's version or any of that. I do a better job, and I can support any platform. So it gives them the advantage to say, hey, look, I already support a heterogeneous world. Why would you want to lock yourself in by going with that platform vendor's backup solution or storage solution or data protection solution where I can fulfill your needs regardless of what platform you use?
Awesome. Now, something that you mentioned, let me spin this just a little bit. I want to try to not go negative as well. VMware in the past...
But they keep pulling me back in.
VMware in the past has had some pretty major criticisms towards Microsoft Stack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they've been very vocal. Now, you know, Microsoft plays very well with some of their, you know, competitors. Citrix is one, you know. I mean, Xen is just as much of a competitor as VMware is in the virtualization stack, right? And even going beyond the virtualization stack, if you look at, you know, you look at terminal services where Microsoft and Citrix have been, you know, duking it out, you know, for number one and number two seeds for years, they still play well together. But when Microsoft got into the hypervisor realm, all of a sudden the VMware Microsoft, you know, relationship tanked, and VMware just started really pounding on Microsoft about, you know, the one or two or the, well, at the time, the 10 things that Microsoft couldn't do, even though only 2% of the customers needed it to do that, you know, that was good enough reason for VMware to badmouth Microsoft. So there is a point to this and a question coming, and that is, now that we're on Windows Server 2012 and those two or 10 things aren't there anymore, in other words, Microsoft is either at par or in many cases way, way, way ahead of VMware with this, you know, Server 2012 and completely leapfrog them in terms of technology, underlying technology, how does that play into the, you know, the thought process of your customers, you know, in terms of the scalability or the live migration and the cost and, you know, all of the things that play into that, because there's animosity there in the past and because all of those issues were resolved, is all of that stuff behind us, or, you know, is there still some, you know, hurdles that Microsoft needs to overcome with their customers?
Well, first of all, you know, that's the nature of the beast. We are in a competitive market and landscape, and many of those criticisms at the time may be true. But we're not living in a static world, right? So Microsoft has moved forward, has improved their capabilities, has invested and committed to this market as an important part of their overall strategy. And so that really, when it comes down to it, it is going to be a process. It's an education. People are going to have to find out and learn for themselves. And that's partly why there are user groups out there. That's partly why you have this platform that you work on. And you know, it's never just one thing. And what will happen is, and I've seen this played out, you know, we've seen this movie before. And what will play out is that, you know, the market will find its way there. Right, so the more customers that implement, the more the peers are finding that there's value into going this way, and so really it all happens in the field of play, and if you are successful in the field of play, which is the data center, which is real customers' implementations, and not even just the data center, I'm also doing a lot of stuff with remote sites, right? So the remote sites have huge requirements as well. And their costs get multiplied by 30, 100, 1,000, tens of thousands, right? And so those costs become a very important part of this discussion as well. So it's the virtual data center, it's the virtual remote sites, it's all of those things that play very heavily into the discussion. And regardless of what your competition says and regardless of what you say, it's all the proof that you're going to need is going to happen out at the implementations, and when the market responds and it works, then all the rhetoric just goes out the window. If it doesn't work, then that will obviously have an impact as well. So we are, I think, on the threshold or perhaps beyond the threshold now of seeing what happens in the virtualization wars, if you will, and I think 2013 is going to be a very important aspect of how we progress in the virtual data center. 2013 is going to teach us a lot.
Totally agree. So based on your research, what are your predictions for virtualization in the next, I don't know, 12, 24 months?
Well, I think that you will see a lot of companies making a shift to a multi-hypervisor and to a and maybe even you'll start seeing people doing a rip and replace. And I believe that, you know, VMware has had the safety zone for quite some time, and I think that they've made a lot of missteps in the last few years, you know, focusing on the application layers and focusing on certain things like cloud that just haven't come to fruition, I think, the way that they thought that it would. So I think that what you're going to see is that there will be this now shift in the way that the people implement their hypervisor strategies. I think you're going to see people now having more options, 80-20, 70-30, 60-40, 50-50, or rip and replace. And so that's going to make a major shift. And what I'm seeing too, and this is an important aspect of it, the channel is also very interested in where things are going, because let's face it, the channel is somewhat saturated now with VMware, and then a lot of them are saying, well, what's our next story? What value do we bring to the customer? And so they're looking for a new chapter as well. And this is not, again, by any means to bash VMware. Great company, great solution, but maybe a little bit of tough love and a wake-up call from the industry say, hey, look, instead of getting, you know, upset or pissed off at what Tony's saying, maybe we should listen to what he's saying, because, you know, this is the reality.
Okay. Now, do you have any, you know, details on, you talked earlier about some of the stuff that you're doing, because you're running the online segment of your VTUG. do you have anything scheduled? Do you know when you're going to kick that off and how people can find out, you know, how people can go sign up for this stuff? I presume you're going to be doing it for free, their webcast. So how do they do that? And what's your immediate plans?
So it's the Virtualization Technology Users Group, or VTUG, VTUG.com. That's our website. And right now what we've done is that we realized and we went out to our members and said, well, you know, what are some of your challenges? And a lot of it's doing online research, finding articles, finding content, finding, you know, webcasts, podcasts, you know, whatever the case may be. And so they search all over and spend hours sometimes trying to find the contents. What we've done is we've consolidated content by asking our members to shoot us what their, you know, what the best articles that they've have on related to server virtualization, to VDI, to cloud, to storage, to data protection, and so on. So we've collected and consolidated hundreds and hundreds of articles, and we do this on a quarterly, we do this ongoing, right? We're collecting new content all the time. So we've become this sort of single source for you to go out and find it, and then you can actually save it and put it on your own page so that you have a collection of articles that you're interested in. We're also beginning to do these user-driven webcasts as well, so that you can go and listen to your peers talk about their solutions. And we're going to launch our first one in May, and then we're going to have a one every month. And add, if more and more interest there, we'll add more of them. But right now, we think one a month would be great. And we're actually going to be partnering with Microsoft to have them do some webcasts to educate our members, because again, that's what the demand is. They want to learn more about it, and because their organizations are mandating them to. So we're going to start also doing some webcasts with you guys to talk about virtualization and what you're seeing out there. And we're going to make sure that the content is less marketing and more technical. We want education here and not marketing. So those are some of the things that we're going to be doing, and we're going to shoot to launch those in May as well.
Okay. Now, one of the things that I do as part of this program is we always provide a guru tip of the day. Mm-hmm. So I think today's tip of the day will be, you know, get smart on the new options available to you on the virtualization platform, particularly with Hyper-V version 3. And, you know, I want to thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today. And, you know, ask, is there any final departing comments that you want to add?
Well, I started out saying, you know, chaos, confusion, and complacency, right? So those are things that that the IT world has always had on its shoulders in terms of how it makes decisions. And I think that, you know, for when you take a look at the virtual data center, this is probably the first time that you really have options to look at things heterogeneously from a platform perspective. And that will grow as well because, again, you know, there are going to be other alternatives for people to have, but now you've got an option, and heterogeneity is really the foundation of what we do in the data center. And so I think that you've got to take a look at that at least. It is an important aspect of what you do for your company and for the data center.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope to have you on the show again.
All right, great. You bet.